I'm telling you that it comes down to like meeting with them more often as you could or you would. Because here we live in a culture, time is the most precious commodity. But they, most of the third world countries, they don't have that kind of like perspective. They want to spend more time, and especially when they are here, they long for friendships, they long for new relationships. So they will always appreciate if you can meet with them once a month or like as frequently as you may do so. Invite them to park. If they have young children, do something. Like one of my missionary friend who lives here, and Matt knows him dearly, he learned how to play these magic tricks. And he goes to these Muslim families who have young children, and he does that during Ramadan. He invites them to break the fast with them, or he asks them if he can come and break the fast with them. So he will fast for a few days based on his Christian faith, but he will go and then just decide to eat with them, break fast with them. And then after that, he will do these like magic tricks for their children. That has helped in a tremendous, I mean, an amazing way to reinforce and strengthen their friendship, and many lives have been touched by this, just the investment of these skills or these efforts or this time. So, and then I think once we are able to develop the friendship, we can identify the common grounds, and I have listed few of them that they come with this misconception that Christians believe in three different gods. So, and you have already learned, I don't need to elaborate on that, the theological aspect of Trinity, but we can correlate to them and try to communicate to them that God is one. It's just that attributes that we talk about, and then as you may already know and you should know, you can elaborate when that opportunity is presented in front of you. We can talk about God being absolute and just. We can talk about the sinful state of man. We can talk about the accountability, because they strongly believe in the judgment, in hell or heaven, and we do too. It's just that how we look at there, that yes, there is the possibility of atonement, possibility of everlasting life in heaven through the forgiveness of sin. And they don't have that concept, and I will, in last 5 minutes, I will touch that aspect as my dear sister asked that question. And then we need to talk about another attribute of God, that God is merciful, because the God they know, Allah, there is no mercy. There is this requirement of actions and requirement of following these creeds and these mandatory things that they have, or rules, set of rules that they have to follow throughout their life. And even after doing so, they are not assured. There is no surety for their salvation that they will ever be able to make it to heaven. In Quran, and you will find the reference there in my presentation, that Allah says that it is an obligatory affair upon Allah to send everyone to hell first, regardless of believer or non-believer, Muslim or non-Muslim, that every human being, everyone will go to hell first, and then it depends upon Allah and will of Allah that whoever he will take it or send it to heaven later. So every Muslim, no matter they offered prayer or did not offer prayer 5 times a day, they will go to hell. So that is a big point, but we have to be patient. We have to wait for that opportunity. We have to first work on our friendship to make that friendship worth bearing that load of revelation, that weight of revelation to them. So be patient during that, and just try to, when you are given the opportunity, instead of trying to talk about these fundamentally different beliefs that, okay, by believing in Muhammad or following Allah, they will never be able to make it to heaven. Just wait and try to more focus on common things. Like if you are given chance, as I said, talk about that. Oh, yes, we also believe in one God. And then try to explain that how all that sums up. And I think patience is the key word during your friendship. You have to be more patient and more, I think, generous in terms of your resources and your friendship. Muslims love exchange of gifts. It's not like let me tell you that we go to our friends or we call our friends to come and meet us for lunch, and it's very cultural that everybody takes care of their own ticket, their own bill. It's not the case. If you ever invite a Muslim to come and join you at a restaurant, by default, please be prepared to pay for that. Because it will be kind of shocking to them if you will expect them to pay. If you invite, you pay. If they invite, they will take care of the meal and they will pay for that. And if you cannot, then be honest, be fair enough in advance and tell them that how it's going to work. But I will always encourage that be generous, because that is how. And then they love. If they will come, I have never seen or have experienced single occasion when they have made it to my home, whether back in Pakistan or here. I lived as a Muslim 27, 28 years of my life, then as Christian. Regardless of the case, whenever they go to visit someone, they take something, whether it's fruit or bouquet, flowers or something like a gift, a household gift, but always carry something. Doesn't need to be super fancy, super expensive, but something like just which acknowledges it's not that they need that or they might need that. It just shows that how much you respect, how much you value or see value in that relationship. So all these small things really help us to, and then moving on to the when you have successfully establish your relationship, we even don't need to talk about or theological kind of like gospel. It can be presented through our actions, through our beliefs. Like even like at that point, once you have established that strong friendship and that strong bond, where they see vice versa, it's two-way traffic, they see value in that friendship, you can even invite them to church, and you don't need to tell them that, hey, if you don't accept and follow Christ, you will go to hell. No, you don't need to say that. You just try to engage them by providing these opportunities, engage them in Christian activities where they can observe that how Christians live, because there is a lot of propaganda, there is lot of like disinformation, there is lot of like things that they need clarity on those things, and the best way is not to talk about that, but to present, to show them that how true believers, true Christians live their lives, how they refrain from immoral lifestyle or how they refrain from sin. Because in one thing is that they think that, oh, Christians are allowed to consume alcohol and or have relationship or intimate or sexual relationships with whatever, multiple people or women or whatever, so the case would be, or LGBT or abortion or things like that. So we can use that opportunity of friendship or that our friendship to explain to them that these are the things we do not have anything to do with Bible. This is not part of Christian beliefs or Christian way of life. So we can really witness to them just by simply exhibiting our lifestyle, exposing our lifestyle to them by befriending with them, instead of just trying to learn extensive theological or getting involved in apologetics or polemics. It can be very simple, or it can be done simply. And then if you feel through your friendship at some point that you realize through prayers that this is the time that my friend is ready, whether you draw that conclusion, you get to that conclusion, or your Muslim friend asks you particular questions that they feel compelled or they curious that they want to learn, that what is Christianity, how you live your Christian faith, and why is forgiveness only possible through Jesus, then you can take it to that final stage. And I'm telling you that in most cases, what I have observed, that it even doesn't get to that point. What will happen? There will There are two possibilities. One, even before getting to that point, your friend will become a Christian, which is rare, but which is very true. Or he will just walk away. He will end the friendship. It's fine either way. Again, because this is not us. We are here only to present the gospel. Don't think that by investing extensively, because I see a lot of my friends, they start befriending with Christians and they think that, oh, they have not done enough. They need to do this. They need to provide them Bible in their language. Then they need to explain about Trinity. They need to explain about atonement. They need to explain about Jesus' lifestyle. They need to explain about how he was killed on the cross and he was resurrected, as compared to Muslim belief that he never died on the cross. No, we don't need to get to that point. I'm telling you that this is something that God will start doing through that process of befriending with Muslims. You just try to keep your friendship as simple as possible. I'm telling you, more simpler you will be able to keep your friendship, more beneficial it will be. Because this is the only way to influence the life. You cannot dictate them. They are under that bondage. Let the Holy Spirit do that part of the work. You just show them Christian, true Christian life, because they see in Hollywood movies and from being an outsider, they see this depiction of Western lifestyle, and they come with all this dilemma and deception and idea about a Western lifestyle. But in some cases, if your conversation, and there are possibilities that some of the friends, like I have a friend who is PhD in toxicology, so he comes with all this academia and intellectual mindset. So he is a scholar of Quran as well. He and his wife, they are Americans now. They also teach in their mosque. They are practicing Muslims, but they are open to learn about Christianity. They have studied whole Bible with one of the very prominent Bible teacher, and then with us, that we have presented Bible to them. But then they did not stop our friendship or quit our friendship. They are more eager to learn about, because of their struggle in their own kind of like processing all this information and being devout Muslim, and then also interested in learning about Christianity. They have this struggle going on in their mind, in their spirit. So they ask us questions. So that takes our friendship to the stage 4, which is extensive. For at that point, you probably need to learn more or consult to someone who has more deeper understanding of Islamic faith, as well as, I mean, certainly we know our faith and our beliefs, but especially for Muslim faith. But at that point, whether that person is already ready to accept Christianity or not, we may have to explain to them about the sacrifice, that why sacrifice was needed, that Jesus offered on the cross, and why he wasn't rescued, but rather he died on the cross and then rose from the dead, because the Quran tells them that Jesus never died on the cross. That was never the case. And then we can talk about the law, that why and how law affects the lives, and also that how law can just end with the dead end. And I have listed references from Quran, that one of the references, and you will find in and throughout the presentation in those references, that says that every Muslim even will go to hell first. God's justice and mercy, that why we believe that he is love, and because of his love and mercy for us, he has presented us with this opportunity to accept Jesus, and through our belief and our faith in Jesus and his sacrifice, we can receive unconditional forgiveness for our sins, that leads to our Jesus being our need to find that soul sufficiency and that finding that in Jesus' sacrifice.
Did you want to have time for a question?
Yes, I'm going to end here because I'm not going to go over the rest of the... So at that point, I'm telling you that the most important is to pray. Mm-hmm. invest your time in prayer for your Muslim friends. Because now he is on that crossroads where this is not an easy task or thing for Muslims to just all of a sudden say, oh, I am no more Muslim. They go through this struggle, this emotional struggle. Even there are cultural barriers, there are religious barriers. There is this guilt factor, shame, that how they're going to face their family. There is potential threat of persecution. So if you get to this point, you have to have ability to assure them that it's not only that theologically that Jesus is love. Jesus' body, which is the church, is also love. And we are here. We are ready to embrace you as our own brother and sister. We are here ready to provide for your needs. We are here ready to meet for your needs or help you to meet your needs. We are here to rescue you, to empower you for the glory of Christ. Next page, reaching out to your Muslim friends. There are recommendations. By the way, at the very last page, I have listed my contact information. Typically, this is I have done it online. This is a 10-hour course, 2 hours a day for 5 days. So the resources are extensive that we can go through the Quranic references, what Bible teaches, as opposed to those Quranic references and belief system based on Quran. If you are interested, I am willing to invest my time and I can answer those questions or perhaps spend those 10 hours on an individual basis. So if you ever find yourself in that situation where you have questions, feel free to write to me or call me or text me. Well, let's spend some time in question and answers.
You mentioned that there's no forgiveness with Allah, but isn't one of his common names the All-Merciful?
Yes. So there are 99 names. Yeah. One of those names is All-Merciful, and then as opposed to that, there is one name, All-Revengeful.
All-Vengeful?
Revengeful, yes. So That's where I'd say that it's all deception. There are parts of Quran which dictates, especially during his life in Mecca, which was the early part of Muhammad's life or earthly life or whatever, then he will certainly be in heaven, in hell, that he promoted tolerance. He talked about showing respect to others. Then there was absolutely opposite side when he migrated to Medina. He started preaching violence against Christians and Jews and infidels. And when Muslims asked, oh, you have said to love Christians and seek their counsel, he said, oh, all that part has been abrogated. So there are two parts of Quran. One is early, which was given by Allah to Muhammad during his Meccan life. But then there are verses which say that all those verses were abrogated. So later superseded the earlier part of Quran. And all those later verses, there are 6,600 something like that verses in Quran. Within 114 surahs. Out of those, there are 109 references, and all of them are found in Medinan part of Quran, which institute violence towards infidels, non-believers, Christians, and Jews. So, and then there are verses, as I just mentioned, which says that, because there is no way that a single Muslim will be able to offer that salat 5 times a day. And then there are verses in Quran which says that if you miss a single prayer during the course of your life, you are subject to hell. It's extensive topic. And then there are places where it says that, okay, you missed these prayers, you missed these creeds, you were unable to pay the zakat, almsgiving, or you are unable to fast during the month of Ramadan, there is still a way that you can make it to heaven, potentially make it to heaven, by blowing yourself. And that's where these jihadists use those verses. Verses of jihad is very easy to learn about them. Even there are those verses mentioned here in this presentation, but you can Google verses of jihad and you can find these hundreds of verses which promote jihad. And what happens is that these, most of the Muslims, they are unable to keep up, majority, in fact, all of the Muslims, they are unable to keep up with these mandates. So many of them, they find these verses then where it says that, okay, you have led this horrible life, you were never able to keep up with all these requirements, but there is a way that you can, so give your life, blow your body for the greater cause of Allah, do jihad. So that's where, I mean, I tell people that try to learn about the lives of all these terrorists who did all these horrendous acts of terrorism towards whether our own country, America, like 9/11, or that Major Nidal at Texas Air Force Base, or Faisal Sheikh, who filled his van with bombs and ran into Times Square. All these were whether born Americans, raised in a very liberal society, culture, but at the end of the day, what happened? Many of them, their account of their lives tells us that they were very liberal. They went to bars, they hung out with their friends, they drank even beer or alcohol, consumed alcohol. They seemed to be very liberal Muslims, and at some point they decided to lay their lives by killing other innocent people. What happens is that when they look back and they find out, oh yeah, we have lived as Muslims, we have lived all these terrible lives, we have no credibility to win favor in the eyes of Allah. Okay, now they find these verses. Okay, if I blow myself for the cause of Allah, I do some act of jihad, then I can find myself in heaven. And they are deceived. So it's very extensive. Quran is a smaller, way smaller, 10 times smaller book as compared to Bible. Quran is about 84,000 words, and Bible has 784,000 words. So 10 times more extensive than, Bible is 10 times more extensive than Quran, but Quran is more extensive in terms of dictating Muslim lives, that how to live, what to do.
So why do the Shia not seem to be affected by those verses? Because you're saying, I think you said,
yes.
All the terrorists
yes.
from the
yes.
Sunni side.
Yes. So one of the biggest difference between Shias and Muslims is not because of Quranic teachings. We have to look at the history, that how Shiites have been treated. Shiites largely have been victimized by Sunnis. They have been persecuted by Sunnis. It's not only that Christians or Jews or rest of the world or the followers of other religions are victims of Islamic terrorism. Shiites also are. In fact, who is Iran's biggest enemy is not America or England. In fact, we are not Iran's enemy. We are basically sympathizers of those people. We love them. Even as a nation, we adore them and we are trying to help them. It's their radical regime. It's Saudi Arabia. It's those Sunni states who hate Iran. I'm telling you, if Saudi Arabia and these Sunni states have been given ability to wipe Shiites and Iran from the face of the earth, they will not wait a second. They will do it. This is the level of hatred between Sunnis and Shiites. So how that affects that aspect is that persecution, regardless of Christians or any other group, when people are persecuted, humans are persecuted, it helps them to, it humbles them. It brings humility in them. So Shiites, they have this long history starting from very own death of the founder of their religion, Muhammad, founder of Sunni Islam and Shia Islam. Right after his death, Shiites became victim of Sunni terrorism. So it's 1400-year-old history of victimization that Shiites have survived. So they have learned, they have developed the appreciation for human life. It's nothing based on the Quran they believe, Shiites believe is the same Quran. Sunnis believe there is no separate version for Shiite Quran. Quran is same, but it's just that they don't practice those verses of violence. They say no, the early part which teaches them to respect the other religions and seek counsel from Jews and Hindus, they see more value in that. They see more value in interfaith or interreligion dialogue as compared to Sunnis. Sunnis, through their radical ideologies and faith system, they have adopted more towards that part of Quran, which abrogates the early part of Quran, and they follow jihad. So term of jihad mostly is exercised by Sunnis. Yes, now there is little difference and there is a fine line. When I'm referring to Shiites, I'm referring to humans. I'm not referring to Iranian government. Yes, Iranian government, you will see and hear these claims that they want to bring hell to America and things like that. That is propaganda carried out by these. There are political, geopolitical reasons behind that. There is least to do with religion. That is more like geopolitical and all that politics that is carried out by Iranian leaders. If you meet Iranian people, I'm telling you, you'll find they are most secular liberal Muslims. I'm using term secular intentionally because they are not, they love prosperity, they love wealth, they love to go to beach, they love to develop friendships, they love to live in prosperity, they love to intermingle with other religions as compared to Sunnis. When Sunni comes to America, they want to bring in their own culture, their own ideologies in their mindset. They still think that that America and Americans have done so much wrong towards their nations or towards their people as compared to Iranian people coming to. And that is the reason Christianity is the fastest and largest growing religion among two Muslim groups. One is Shiites and one is Hazaras. And why Hazaras? Hazara is an ethnic community within Muslims. Lot of Hazaras are Shiites and lot of Hazaras are maybe like 60% Hazaras are Shiites and 40% are Sunnis. But no matter Sunni or Shia Hazaras, they are accepting Christianity. Why? Because if you look at the history of religious persecution, Hazaras are also historically have been persecuted. In fact, there are some studies which suggest that Hazaras are, it's just the number which makes Christians the greater victim of religious persecution. But Hazaras are the largest victim of religious persecution. But because they are very few in number, that's why they are. But Christians are like, you know, there are 2.3, 2.4 billion Christians. Okay, more questions? Hazaras. So Hazaras basically mostly are on the border between Iran and the neighboring nations. Or the largest population of Hazaras live in Pakistan, in southern part of Pakistan, Balochistan mainly, and then in Afghanistan. And by the way, Christianity is growing in Iran and it's growing in Afghanistan. And you know why? Because of all this violence, all this. So I'm not trying to say that all this terrorism and violence and bomb blasts are helpful. They are terrible, no matter they target the lives of Christians or Muslims or any other human being. Terrorism is terrorism. Brutality is brutality. This is not something that we should appreciate at all. But when Muslims themselves are becoming victims of their own terrorism, it helps, it shakes them, it shakes their foundation. It helps them to wake up, start questioning that why all this is happening. Okay, if Muslims kill Christians, okay, that Quran calls for that, or there are reasons to do that. But why Muslims killing Muslims? I'm telling you that, and that is one of the greatest advantage that when these immigrants come, not all the immigrants migrate here for that same very reason that they are persecuted in their own religion by their own people. But a lot of immigrants coming to America are the victims of their own the persecution by their own people. So when they come here, they are broken. When they are broken, they are more open to find out the answer that why they have to give up all their possessions. Like in Afghanistan, when fall of Afghanistan happens, as a result of that fall, we decided to bring 112,000 Afghanis here to our own nation. Majority of them will be victims whose lives were threatened by their own Muslims, not by Christians and Jews. So that gives us an opportunity to not only befriend with them, but to answer their questions that why, what happened, why it all happened. Okay, what else?
Can I give a testimony? I think everybody remembers exactly where they were on I was at work. I had a woman standing right next to me. She worked for me. She was Afghan. She wore a hijab every day to work. I treated her like I would have treated anybody else. She was in as much a shock as anybody else. But I never thought of Adela as being anything but human, that would suffer just as I would. I didn't push her towards Christianity. If she wanted it, she knew I was a Christian. But I didn't treat her any different. I know she was dealing with issues. Every time I saw Adela, she would come and talk to me. Every time. She'd go out of her way. Hi, Paul. How are you? How are things going? You just have to treat them like people. Respect who they are. Show them that you love them as a Christian.
And there are a lot of churches just to build on that. I wanted to finish with one story, and then if you have, I'm here, so if you have more questions, I can answer on an individual basis. There are a lot of churches who are now making arrangements to have these kind of like events where they invite Muslims or immigrants to come and then show them our hospitality. There are like, it's not only like few organizations now, there's a lot of churches are doing that, and then there are organizations that I want, if you want to know more about them, I can send you a list of them or events, or you can even just Google events addressing or hosting Muslims in RDU. One of those organizations is what is that called? Our name will come to my mind. But during one of these events recently, there were a lot of immigrants from Afghanistan, all of them Muslims. They attended that event where they were hosted over a meal, so food was there. Then they were asked that how they feel and what challenges they face while living here, and how we as Christians can and as humans can help them. So this was a kind of like multicultural kind of event hosted by one of these organizations here in Raleigh area. And at the end of that event, many of those participants who were Muslims left with the desire to extend the friendship, to take it to next level. They have questions in their mind, they have needs in their lives, so they contacted back to the hosts, and within weeks, one whole family, they accepted Christ. So this can go fast forward. I mean, the reward can be instant, or it might take time, but the point here is that Christian church opened their doors, showed them the Christian way of life and the hospitality, and as a result, someone's life was changed. So it's not that millions of Muslims are accepting Christ, basically, but I'm telling you that more Muslims are leaving Islam. Unfortunately, they are becoming atheist and agnostic. There is another like report, a survey basically done by Pew organization, which tells the numbers that how Muslims are becoming dissatisfied with their own religion, and they are turning towards atheism or becoming agnostics. But there are Muslims who are finding refuge in Jesus and becoming Christians. So more Muslims are leaving Islam ever than before. So we praise God for that.
Just one practical question. I think we talked briefly about it before, of gift giving as an important thing, and how can we use Christmas and Easter as opportunities to develop friendship?
Yes, so...
Because Easter is going to be during...
Ramadan, yes, yes. So that is a great question, and I think... Certainly, I won't say that straightforward inviting a Muslim family to Christian Christmas celebration or Easter celebration would be a great starting point, but it will be a great point. It can be a great opportunity, and but
just like including them, giving them a Christmas gift.
Yes, yes. So there are two parts of Christmas. One is cultural, like, I mean, whole America all the Americans celebrate Christmas, but necessarily, not necessarily all the celebrations are biblical or represent the Christian faith. Christmas has become more of a cultural kind of event, or even Easter even, like we find, like kids find more interest in opening those eggs, breaking those eggs and all that things. But yeah, I mean, so as a cultural event, Muslims will adore that if you invite them, like let's say, there are a lot of like egg hunt events. So if you know a Muslim family, spare some time out of your busy life, busyness, and invite them, hey, we are planning to go there. It will be great fun time for your family or perhaps for your children. Come, we will go meet in that park or wherever that egg hunt in a church is being carried out. So that can help break some like barriers. And then exchanging Christmas gifts, one of the things out of many things these Christian ministries who are focused on Muslim Christian relationship do is they host Christmas dinners. It's not only like one ministry. There are ministries all across America who does Christmas dinners, and they don't limit those only to their church participants. They try to make it public event where they invite these people coming from different cultures or different religious backgrounds. Years ago when I came here, I was Christian. I accepted Christ in 2002. I made it here in 2010 after a series of persecution. I was broken. I was traumatized. I was I needed to learn about the culture, and I started attending this church. And right in 2011, we came here in 2010. This time comes when they have this, and it was, now it's to lesser extent, it was used to be big event, pig weekend. So when I saw all of a sudden this big board popped up on the side of the street in front of my church saying pig weekend, I was Christian, but I felt offended, not because of my faith, because of my cultural background. And I thought, I became concerned. I thought, why pig weekend? Why not chicken weekend? So that the doors are open, not limited only to Christians. Doors are open to everyone across the board. That even like, especially that church was in the vicinity of downtown Raleigh. There are a lot of internationals, a lot of Muslim students from Middle East, from all parts of the world. So I talked with pastor. I said, why? I mean, even I still, I mean, I eat, I cook, I love bacon, basically, especially when it's free. Nowadays, it's very expensive. I love, but on other end, when I was raised in that culture, where it was basically, and it was sinful thing to even think about. Like for one of the biggest abuses for Muslims is you call someone a pig, some Muslim a pig. So there are small things which we will still eat. It's food. It's not nothing like disgraces our faith if we do a chicken picking or cook a chicken or do something or perhaps beef or mutton or something, other forms. But it will open up a whole new spectrum and opportunity to invite and let these Muslims be part of our celebrations. So we can invite them to like in your church. If you have any, like you live in the way, there might be some Muslims living here, and you can even go and knock at the doors, intentionally target them, and just greet them, general, and give them, pass on that information. We're going to have some slides, some celebration where there will be food and opportunity to meet and mingle with each other, make new friends, learn about unique aspects of different cultures. Please, will you give us honor to be part of that celebration? I'm telling you that 9 out of 10 will come. 9 out of 10, it's not 1, 9. Because they long for these opportunities. They want to be part of it because now this is where their lives are. This is where they are living. So as my brother said, look at them like human. Basically, when I was preparing, I thought that I have costume with beard and all that, and then wearing that. I was thinking to wear that. I didn't want it to scare my friends here. And then take it off, because it's not my external appearance which makes me who I am in Christ. It's my faith. So they look at them like human beings, like you and me, one of us. When you will start looking at them as humans, you will find enormous amount of opportunities to be friend with them, to show them the appreciation for life, even for their culture, the way they think. Because we cannot just impose new things on anyone. Think about children, how we teach them, how they evolve to be adult, or to be youth, and then grown to be an adult. It's a process. It's not a one-day job.
Now, would it be disrespectful to talk to a woman who's Muslim in public?
Well,
in America?
Yeah, no, not at all here. So most of them, when they come here, they are pretty open. They are pretty open. They will talk, but then there are some Muslims who I know the families who that they make their women to wear hijab even here, living in America. But talking to anyone is pretty common that they will be open to that. It won't be disrespectful or offensive to them.
I don't think you can touch a Muslim
woman. No, yeah, that is something that I will. I'm telling you now here with the. We live in a global village now. I mean, with this media and internet age, the world has changed. Diversity is not only happening here in our own culture in terms of racial. It's not only limited to racial diversity. It's across the board. Language and food. When I was growing up, I never thought or heard of Papa John or Burger King. Now McDonald's, Papa John, Burger King is in every nation. In Pakistan, they have branches. So they are more kind of like liberal. I will still say that just these are the individual calls made on whom you are interacting with. And you will very quickly figure out to what extent they are open to intermingle between like men and women, or invite you inside their home where women are also part of the conversation, or they want to. So you will learn as you start meeting with them. And in most cases, they will be open. Even they will be open to hugs. Like you hug, or you just like, you know, wrap your arm around the girls, women, Muslim girls. But not in all the cases. So you have to made that call based on. There's like so many different nations here now. Whole world has come to our doorsteps. It's just so much diversity that's why I started with the first stage, that recognizing their cultural and ethnic background is very important. Yes, sir.
Generally speaking, are Muslims intimidated by the I'm going to use the word regular because I can't, regular Americans? I mean, are they intimidated by us? Or by our group? Because I'm thinking, if I was to go among Muslim people, across the street to Muslim people, I'm just wondering if I am making them reticent at all to converse with me, because they're just intimidated a bit by people outside the Muslim arena.
I will say simple answer would be no. But again, all these things are extensive to talk about. One of the things about Muslims is that they live two lives. No matter they are in their own country, they live a life openly where they will try to show off their pious, they are like, they follow the whatever, they're devout Muslims, and then they have their own closet lives and things. And they do believe that Allah sees over or oversees their lives, and that's why they become radical and give their lives. But then here, even here, they live two lives, but those are two different types of lives. One is their own personal opinion, their own personal beliefs, and one is in public where they will try or seem to be trying to assimilate in the culture, become part of the culture, or appreciate the culture, new culture they are placed in. But in the end, I'm telling you, every Muslim in their mind thinks 100% out of 100%, I will repeat again, that they are superior and we are inferiors. Why? Because they have higher moral values, they have true religion, they follow the true creator, and we all are immoral regardless of Christians or Jews or atheists or even in terms of lifestyles, LGBT or non-LGBT or whatsoever the case would be. They think that Islam brings this entitlement of being superior. So when they come here in deep down in their heart, they have this kind of sentiment that, okay, they are in this culture, but they should try to their utmost ability to avoid this culture, especially when it comes about moral values or living style, to maintain their superiority. And then they also look at us as because of the decisions and the history that we are kind of like, as a nation, we are intruders. We have caused all this, whatever has happened in. So it's just like different, like you really cannot know. So that's why I do not make that mistake to categorize Muslims. To me, the Muslims are Muslims. The only thing which can ever change their lives is Christ and the gospel. If there is a Muslim, he seems to be very secular, very liberal, or very open for the religious conversation, but he's still a Muslim, I will always be cautious, because they can be dangerous at any time, because it's not them then. As long as they are under that bondage, that creed, that power of Islam, again, I will refer to what I said a few minutes ago, that during my presentation, that these were all at some point known to be very liberal Muslims who blew themselves and who took over the planes, or rather grabbed the guns and killed or ran with their vehicles to kill others, pedestrians. So the only thing which can change the course of their life is gospel. They can be very liberal, very peace-loving Muslims for a certain amount of time, perhaps all of their lives, and die in that darkness or the age of darkness and then go to hell. This is what it is. This is unfortunate that Islam is a very, very, very kind of captive, that oppressive. So that brings that responsibility, emphasizes on that responsibility for us, at least towards those Muslims who are brought to our own neighborhoods and our doorsteps, that we need to present gospel to them. Well, I think we should be done. Pastor Jim, you want to close us in prayer? I'm here if you want to ask any more questions.
You want to close in prayer?